Hey guys, and welcome to the Alabama Freshwater Fishing Report, presented by Great Days Outdoors Magazine. The first podcast to bring you the local fishing report for Alabama's lakes and rivers, whether it's good, bad, or ugly. I'm your host, Nick Williams, and this week's show is brought to you by... Alrighty guys, welcome back to another episode of the Alabama Freshwater Fishing Report. Got something special today. We've got some of our friends from the Alabama Rivers Alliance. Y'all may remember Jack West. This time we got Cindy Lowry here. And we've also got Stephen Gann with the Alabama Beer Company here to talk about protecting the rivers, here to talk about new beers, and here to talk about that special place in the Venn diagram where that overlaps. So I'm excited to get into this today. Cindy, Stephen, welcome to the show.
Thanks for having us.
Yeah, thanks.
So just to get introduced, I'm recording today from down here on the Mobile Tensaw Delta in Baldwin County. Cindy and Stephen, where are y'all coming in from?
We're coming in from Birmingham. I'm downtown in our office over here on 2nd Avenue North.
And I'm hanging out in our office in Avondale. Sort of the south side of Birmingham.
Nice. So y'all are right up there kind of on the Cahaba. How far are both y'all off of the Cahaba as it flows through there?
Well, I'm actually in the Black Warrior watershed right now. So on the on the Birmingham city side of the little red mountain, we call it here, is the Black Warrior watershed. And on the other side of it's the Cahaba watershed. So we're both technically in the Black Warrior, probably Village Creek to be exact.
Nice. There we go. I stand corrected. I get up there just enough to think I know the geography of the area.
Well, the great thing about Birmingham is that you don't have to go too far to get to the Cahaba or the Black Warrior. So,
yeah, no, it's really centrally located. You're not that far away. I've looked at it and done the math. You're not that far. If you're in Birmingham, you can pop over to the Bankhead National Forest. You can pop over to Little River Canyon. You're not really all that far outside of the Tennessee. And then I can get here from my house in about 3 hours. So you're really not that far. You're in that sweet spot where you can decide, do I want to go to the mountains or do I want to go to the beach?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Well, good deal. Stephen, I know new business owners usually don't have a lot of free time, but last week we had Andy Witten on and he was talking a little bit about his deer hunting and his fishing. Have you been up to anything in the outdoors here lately?
I have. We got a buddy that has a couple farms up in the Trustville area and then also down in the Marion area, and we did a little fishing, caught some crappie on a little pond out there. He's trying to get a lot of his crappie out of there and restock it with some bass. It was fun. We had some guys from Montana that actually are guides in Montana out, and the night before we strung up a bunch of flies, and that was the first time I saw somebody make a fly out of dog hair from one of the dogs there. And it was a lot of fun. We had a good time. We stayed up a little bit too late, but got up early enough to rip some lips. On the hunting side, I actually haven't been able to get out much recently. You know, I'm excited for missed duck season this year, but excited to see where dove season takes us. And then, of course, getting back into the fall time, getting back up in a tree stand would be nice.
Yeah, I missed the past two seasons with kiddo. This was my first season. I was back in the swing of things. If it's any consolation, I can tell you, I don't think you missed much with duck season this year. I did some hunting on the Tennessee River and did a lot of hunting down here, and just bad year to be a duck hunter, man. Cindy, what about you? I know we're swapping back and forth. We're in that bipolar part of the year with the weather where yesterday it was 80 degrees down here, and then today I woke up and it was 30. So are you doing wintertime activities or spring activities?
Well, like you said, it depends on the week, but most of my outdoor stuff of late has been on some property that my husband and I bought early last year. We bought about 40 acres up in Blount County, where I'm from, and we enjoy it when we can. So got to do some camping in that warm snap that came around a couple weeks ago. And so, yeah, we try to camp on the weekend. He's the hunter. I'm not a hunter, but I'm an eater, and I enjoy the eating part of that.
Oh, yeah.
And he's been able to get a couple of deer this year, so that's nice. And so, yeah, we've just been – when we go up there, we mostly just play. It's forested land. We're maybe going to build a house there one day, but right now it's just for fun. It's got a little creek on it. It's in the Locust Fork watershed to orient from a river standpoint, but it's just got a little creek on it. And we just kind of get to enjoy it and dream about. I think he's getting ready. He's into he works for the Nature Conservancy, into the prescribed fire stuff. So he's kind of looking at it from when can he burn it?
Yeah, I know that's I got a friend who just bought a place up on the Alabama River, up or around kind of like the Miller's Ferry area, and he's in that stage. He's getting settled and playing, and then also seeing how much work it is. I know my little river camp, it's always those fun properties are always a lot of work, but it's good for you, good for the spirit.
Yeah, but definitely been flying a lot of privet. That's our main work right now.
Yeah, see, that's something we'll have to talk about at some point on the Huntland podcast. Is I know my boss Joe By, he's always fighting privet and Kogon grass and burning his place, converting loblolly over into a longleaf pine habitat and everything. So it's good that there's private landowners out there fighting the good fight. Good that there's people doing it on public land and on private. Well, talk to me a little bit, Cindy. Well, it's always kind of a little bit tricky having three guests on at the same time, make sure people don't talk over each other. I think we'll start just kind of remind our listeners about what Alabama Rivers Alliance does for anglers here in the state of Alabama. Can you talk to us a little bit, just kind of broad framework of what Alabama Rivers Alliance is and what y'all do?
Yeah, absolutely. So we're a statewide network of local community-based organizations, river-focused organizations all around the state that are working to help keep the rivers healthy, clean, make sure that there's habitat for the fish to live and that the water's clean for eating the fish and recreating. So from a statewide standpoint, that looks like Friends of the Creek groups. There's dozens of those all around the state. River keepers, I know you've had some of them on the podcast before, and they're out there. We kind of consider them the boots on the ground. They're keeping their eyes on the water and making sure that we know what's going on so that we can advocate at the state level for policies that protect the waterways, for making sure that all the groups have the resources they need and we promote what they're doing. We also make some documentary films through a Southern Exposure program. So every summer we make short documentaries to help educate folks in the state about where these places are and what's important about them and what the threats are that we can all get together and work together to protect them.
Nice. You talk about working on the state level. Is there been any particular big projects that y'all have been involved in that may be particularly impactful to the fishing community?
Well, one thing that's been kind of an underlying effort that we've done for a while now is trying to get an Alabama water plan. And that's really a proactive planning process at the state level to make sure that there's enough water kept in our rivers and streams to keep them healthy while supplying all the needs for agriculture, the economy, energy generation, any kind of needs that our water, drinking water, all the things we use our water for. But when you're pulling that water out of the system, you also got to think about how much you're leaving in the system to make sure that there's enough for the critters and all the things and the downstream users and landowners. So a water plan is something other states have done to really look at that and think about how are we managing our water, how are we accounting for water use, and how are we going to deal with it when we have conflict. Y'all probably know we've been in fights with our neighboring states over the years over water. So this is something our state doesn't have. We don't have really much of a plan in place or any protocols in place for dealing with that. And we had some luck with the previous governor getting some process underway with some of the agencies that deal with water and stakeholders that kind of has been dormant for a few years. And we're still trying to get that back on the plate because we think it's really important.
Yeah, when I heard from Jack that we didn't have a water plan, prompted me to look into it. And I've got a book on my shelf actually right here. It is for the readers in the group, Southern Water, Southern Power by Christopher Manganiello, I think, if I'm pronouncing that right. And it is not a light read, but I've been digging into it a little bit, and it's crazy. I think a lot of people, it's not on their radar. You know, we got so many rivers, so much water in Alabama, and we get so much rain. You know, Mobile down here is always either the first or second rainiest city. And you think, oh, well, what do you need a water plan for? But Georgia gets a lot of rain too. And you look at some of the issues that they've had around Atlanta, and you look at how fast Alabama is growing. I think, I don't want to be fast and loose with my facts here, but I think last I checked, the Southeast in general was growing at like 125% the rate of the rest of the U.S. So you're seeing this huge growth. Anybody, you know, down here, especially in Baldwin County and Mobile, can attest to that. All that growth and water, A lot of it, but a lot isn't infinite. So I'm glad that somebody's looking ahead to that, because it's kind of scary when you look in parts of the world where they're getting to the point where they're starting to kind of maximize what they can do with the local aquifers. It gets real hairy real quick when the resource you've taken for granted starts to dry up.
Yes, it does. And we think about that from a big picture too, that as places dry up, other places that have water, there's going to be more demand on places like the Southeast. So whether that's industry or agriculture or just people. So it's definitely something that I think it's hard to be proactive because there's a lot of stuff going on that makes you taking the time to sit down and think, how are we going to plan for something that that isn't happening right now in our face? And there's certainly things we have to deal with that are happening now, but I think planning while we're not in crisis is a really important thing for us to do.
Absolutely. Yeah, no, that's a good point. There's been a lot going on in recent years. Anybody can pick up their preferred news channel and see just a constant barrage of stuff clamoring for your attention. And there's stuff that you have to do that's not fun, hard decisions you have to make, and current events that you have to keep up and track of, and stuff that you have to be reactive to. But at the same time, I agree with you. Like, it's good to be proactive, and especially me and my wife have this conversation at the end of the day. All the stuff that you do, going to work and paying the bills and keeping the house clean and keeping yourself healthy and everything, like, what are you doing it for? At the end of the day, you want to have fun. Like, you want to have a good time. Like, that's the reason that you go to work, is so that you can do the things that you want to do. You can go rip lips on the local pond, or you can go play with your recreational property. And, it doesn't do much good if we handle all the current events and win all the battles, and then you lose your fishing. And what'd you do it all for?
Right.
And we're going to take a quick break. Y'all take a minute to check out some of the businesses that keep this show free for you. This week's episode of the Alabama Freshwater Fishing Report has been brought to you by Stephen. I want to transfer over to you a little bit. So, and I promised to our guests we're going to tie all this together here in a little bit, but I have read a few press releases about the Alabama Beer Co. People may not know this. I'm a beer enthusiast. I've got several different beers in my fridge right now. I've got a few Guinnesses, and I've got some stuff from the breweries that we have down here. I've drank a few of the Cahaba Brewery beers up there. So I sample. I try not to sample too much, especially on days when we're recording, but every now and then a beer may make it on my desk in the podcast. Talk to me about a little bit about the Alabama Beer Co. What inspired that? How'd that get started?
I've been in the beer industry now for 6.5 years. Worked at a local brewery up here. I think a lot of people know Trim Tab Brewing Company. And we saw a shift in customer demands, and we saw a shift in customer needs, especially as pockets started getting tight, and as well as more breweries opening up and opening up. And so we saw this white space where there really wasn't a quote unquote Lone Star of Alabama, as Lone Star is to Texas, or Rainier beer from the Pacific Northwest. And I don't know if it was that no one has thought about it. I think people have, but in consumer trends as well as the industry trends, craft beer and local beer is struggling right now. And so we decided to take this opportunity to work with local breweries throughout the state and kind of ask them, how do you see the future of craft beer and all this? And the answer was kind of all the same as no one knows. And so we kind of had that feeling as well. And so we were able to use these extra open tank spaces that are, at some of these larger breweries to negotiate favorable prices. And by doing that, we were able to produce a light beer at domestic prices, which again, hasn't been done before, probably thought about, but it's really a right timing. But with that, there's got to be some other element to beer. And so we just started thinking of how can we be more community oriented than just having a brewery. And I know you said we'll tie it all together, so we can wait to tie it all together here in a minute. I don't want to spill the beans just yet on how that is, but that's how we got started, was really looking at this opportunity in this white space of how can we create a light local beer that can compete at domestic prices? And it's really about timing, and it's really about, you know, working together with other breweries and utilizing their space.
So yeah, I definitely want to get into the exciting part here in a little bit and give y'all both a chance to talk about it, and I'm really looking forward to learning more about this. But I do want to talk before we jump into the nitty-gritty of kind of the partnership that's going on here. I want to talk about the beer, because unless something's changed, the last time I had looked at y'all's website, it looks like y'all offer one beer, and I was pretty excited that it's just a light lager, like a very, I don't want to say plain, but that is usually my go-to beer. That's the old reliable, is some sort of a light lager, especially in those Alabama summers when it's 100 degrees outside and 200% humidity. I'm not big on stouts and IPAs and stuff like that. Like, you want something cold, you want something crisp and refreshing. And I think y'all's tagline was hops, barley, and water. And since I'm a simple man with a simple mind, I like simple concepts. So talk to me a little bit more about the light lager.
Yeah. So again, it's that white space that we saw. You know, there's so many IPAs out there, and there's so many good IPAs out there that have been around, you know, at least in this state since 2008. There's great sours out there, but again, it's those kind of markets or shelf space, so to say, is really, really difficult to get into. So yeah, we do one beer. We do one beer, light beer. We keep it as simple as possible. And I think the idea behind that too is, let's not try to reinvent the wheel here. Let's just give people a light beer that's very straightforward. If you want something else with flavor, that's great. There's opportunities for that with other breweries, but if you're looking for that just old, true, I just need a beer and it better be cold, that's where we step in. So that was kind of the idea, was kind of looking at, again, the market and craft beer and where it's going, and saying, let's do it completely different and do a 99 calorie light beer that tastes like a Coors Light.
I like it. And there's I like the honesty there, you know, it's just light beer. Cause that is, like, if we're going to be honest, like, I know there's a lot of people that drink craft beers and IPAs and sours. Braided River down here, they make two really good sours that I'm a fan of, you know, but as far as, like I said, just that everyday get through the end of work, and now I get to sit down and put my feet up and stop thinking about work, and the kids have gone to bed. Like, everybody, my dad, my whole life growing up, he wasn't a heavy drinker, but he would crack open a Miller Lite. And then I know, you know, I had buddies who their dad, their family, it was the Coors Light family or the Michelob Ultra family. And I think it's cool. I was just talking, you know, with my wife, we are looking at getting into a community supported agricultural program, you know, trying to get your vegetables, but get them local. Know the farmer that you're buying from, instead of just buying something at a chain grocery store. And you're like, well, did the strawberries come from here? Did they come from Mexico? Did they come from a place I've never heard of? You know, kind of getting to that point where we've, you know, got not much, but a little bit of disposable income that we can start funneling towards things that matter more. So I like it, man. I really regret, to the audience listening in, we were supposed to do this meeting in person, and I was told that Steven would provide the beer, and I was very excited about that. And at some point we'll have to make that happen. Birmingham's not that far away. So y'all, everybody, listen for a part two. If that's what it takes for me to get a free beer, I'm willing to go towards those lengths. I'm willing to make those redneck economics work, 4-hour drive for a free beer.
There you go.
Tell me more then. So, hops, barley, water. I guess there's not a lot to talk about there, but tell me about your hops, your barley, and your water. Where does all that come from?
Yeah, so, you know, with these breweries, we're kind of piggybacking off of the ingredients that they currently have on hand. And, you know, the hops are really in there as a preservative, not a flavor. So it's very light on the hops. It's your traditional Pacific Northwest hops. You really won't taste them. It's just, it has to be in there for preservation purposes. But the grain is all two row. It's going to be Pilsner malts. So if you think of a Pilsner beer, that's where that Pilsner color comes from, like in a Miller Lite and a Coors Light. That's just the flavor profile, the malting process of the malts themselves. So it's two-row barley, and then the water is Alabama water. We are getting this water from, every brewery gets their water from city water, tap water, but that water is coming from the local watersheds, and getting treated and then getting put back into what you drink out of your taps. What's very unique and interesting about Alabama, and especially with this kind of beer, this was brought to my attention early on when we started talking about this, was Alabama has really good water for brewing. It has a minerality level, especially in the northern parts, a lot of limestone enriched water, which gives it a nice crisp minerality flavor to it. So some breweries will use reverse osmosis and add minerals to dial in flavor. We don't do that. We go straight from the tap into the boil. It does get filtered through carbon filtration, but you don't lose that minerality taste. Another unique thing that we do is we actually double brew this batch. So we brew it up to a 8.5% beer, ferment it out, and then we will cut it at the very end. The reason for that is to get that purity of the water that we're using and that minerality. It doesn't get burned off in the boil, and it doesn't get scrubbed out in fermentation. So we wanted this beer to kind of highlight the minerality of the Alabama water. And a lot of the complaints that we get about this beer is that it's watery. It's like, yeah, exactly. That's the point. It's a beer that's light and watery and refreshing. That was the whole goal. We're not trying to hit you with a bunch of hops, and we're not trying to hit you with this, funky, unique malting process. It's, man, we're trying to highlight why Alabama is a great place to make, especially lagers, and lager beers, whether they're light like this or whether they're full-bodied.
I like it. And the thing about a quote unquote watery beer is that's a versatile beer. That's a beer that goes with a cheeseburger, or it's a beer that goes with a steak, or it's a beer that just goes by itself. So
Absolutely.
I'm definitely picking up on what you're putting down. So I guess that ties into what we're about to talk about next, the Drift Fund. So I've been excited about this. I've seen a little bit of information on it, but with water obviously being something that's such a big deal with your beer, I guess this is where we tie into now the Drift Fund. So how did that idea originate?
Yeah, and I'm going to pass this off to Cindy once I get, I'll kind of do the introduction, but Cindy's kind of the mastermind behind Drift itself. So Drift stands for Defending River Integrity for Tomorrow. When we were looking at this beer and doing one simple beer, we thought to ourselves, how can we tie this back to the community? How can we have a continuous positive story line about this? And that's when Cindy, I called Cindy up and we met, and she, I'm not going to spill everything, but she has had this idea for a very long time. And so I'll pass it off to Cindy to kind of talk about the intricate works of Drift, how it's funded, and what the funds go towards.
All right. Thanks, Stephen. Yeah, so let me just start by saying I'm also a big fan of beer, and I love all the craft beers that we have here in Alabama, and the breweries in Alabama, hands down have been great partners to river groups all across the state and other community groups. They're generous folks, local businesses that do great partnerships with nonprofits and to better the community. And I think it's not the first time I've heard, beer folks come to me and say how important the water is in Alabama to their beer process. And so that's another reason that they kind of naturally think of river groups when they want to do a partnership. So I've been thinking about this for a long time. As a statewide group, I mentioned we have a network. We actually have a network of over 100 partners across the state. And a lot of those are all volunteer, really small groups that are just working, to protect either to share their local creek and watershed with the people in their community to make sure they're getting out and paddling and fishing and hanging out and that they have a safe place to do that. And so one of the things we like to do, as I mentioned, was support those local groups however we can. But we're a small nonprofit too. So having having funds to give them money is not something we typically have the ability to do. We promote what they do. We provide, you know, expertise and guidance where they ask for it and different things like that. But giving money is not something we usually have the capacity to do. So I've wanted for a long time to figure out a way to generate a small grants fund for these local groups, particularly in cases where what we see often is they come to us in a couple of different ways. One is something happens in a community, like there's a pollution spill in their local creek and they need to figure out what it is, or there's someone proposes some kind of industry in their backyard that they're worried about maybe is going to pollute their waterway or their local water resource. And so they need to organize to fight that or to at least participate in the, you know, what's going to happen there. And so those are kind of things that these people weren't prepared to be able to pay for a website or host some meetings and feed people and do the things it takes to kind of organize your community. And they come to us often for help for things like that. Another thing that they come to us for sometimes is just to start a group. You know, local community says, I love this river and creek. Why are we not? Let's start a group to just protect it and help get people out on it and work with local school kids to do cleanups and things like that. So when they start up, they need some help in those early days to get things started. So these are all the things we've faced over the years that have kind of had my mind wondering, like, how can we, you know, maybe have a small grants fund? And so I've pitched this idea a few times and it hadn't stuck. But when Stephen came in and wanted to partner it was clear in his, you know, words to me was that this was going to be a long-term partnership, that this beer, I knew from the beginning when he shared his vision of the beer with me, that this was going to be a beer that was popular because it is, it's a light beer and it is, you know, it's when it's a hot day on the river in Alabama, you want a light beer.
Yeah.
My favorite river activity. I'm not really an adrenaline person. So one of my favorite river activities is what I call river sitting. And you just get that low chair and you sit down in the rocks and you hang out and you drink beer and, you know, you can throw a fishing line out in the shoals as well when you're doing that. But that's a time when you really want just a light beer. So I knew it was going to be a popular beer and I knew that we could have a long time partnership. And so I pitched the fund idea to Stephen. He loved it from the beginning and they ran with it. And I you know, give them credit for the name, the Drift acronym they came up with the name. And here we are. Now we have a fund.
That is absolutely beautiful. And I'll just let you know, there's always that stage in the podcast where I'm feeling my guests out. And right there when you talked about river sitting, I was like, okay, Cindy's all right. Like, I can hang with Cindy. That's I do more and more of that as I get a little bit older. I got a little girl and I can't go as hard as I used to. So a lot of times in an effort to get her out the past 2 years, I've been doing a lot of river sitting because that's about all you can do when you're trying to keep a 2-year-old alive in a creek is just sit there.
But you're not really sitting much though, chasing her.
You know, if you just get that couple of minutes, like I'm sure, do y'all have kids? I'm sure if y'all, the audience members who have kids know that 2 minutes worth of river sitting, sometimes that hits and you just got to take it. So.
No, I don't have any kids, but I definitely tried to get my nieces and nephews out there as much as I could. They're a little older now in their teenage years, so they do what they want to do. But when they were younger, always try to give them those opportunities.
Absolutely. Now this year I picked up the same year I picked up my daughter, I picked up a niece and a nephew. So I'm doing the uncle thing too. And it's definitely you get when they combine forces, then you don't get any sitting done. But with one, I can usually get a little sitting done here and there. That's awesome. And a lot of the issues that you were talking about there, especially like small watersheds and small groups, I've seen that play out a lot. And a lot of times you got to really be paying attention to it because it just comes up as a blip on social media. Something will happen. Some pictures will get posted. You have two or three people that get mad, get sad. You know, they're hurt that their local swimming hole isn't being treated right. And unfortunately, I was just having this conversation with somebody the other day. A lot of times it never amounts to anything other than an angry social media post and it just sizzles and dies. And that's really unfortunate, you know. There's a lot of waterways. I'm really happy down here. We've got Mobile Bay Keepers. You talked about all the other river keeper organizations, and we've had river keepers on to talk about the work that they do. You know, but there's places here, there's rivers and creeks that I go on where you may have 20, 30 miles of just pristine river, full of spotted bass, super pretty. And to be honest, the only reason it's still there is it's just out of the way. Nobody's laid eyes on it yet to put a subdivision on it or an asphalt plant or whatever the case may be, a tannery or whatever, like it's just sitting there. The only reason it survived is because nobody's seen it yet. So what you're talking about is I think very important. And I know that there's a variety of, supposedly there's local, state, and federal government programs that are supposed to provide some oversight there, but I think we all have seen where just people slip through the cracks and the ability. It sounds like the idea of it, small grant, something where you can make a quick decision and cut a check and be like, hey, yes, that's a fight that we think is worth fighting and we want to help you with that. And we can be liquid and be mobile and get that done now. Like,
Correct.
do the town hall, write your local representative, like have the rally, send out the flyers, like here you go.
Yeah, and I think it's also, a lot of times, these grant funds from the state or federal government or from other organizations, they take a long time to
Oh
actually
yeah.
get the funds. And so
Yeah, by the time you get the funds, either the harm has been done or you've lost momentum,
correct. And so I think this is a unique kind of stopgap where, we may not be able to provide all the funds that you need, but we can definitely get you started. And so, the fund itself, and this is, how is the fund funded? So the fund is 2 cents of every beer. So think about a case of beer, that's 48 cents every single case that's sold. Alabama Beer Company cuts a check to the Drift Fund. So every single time someone orders a beer, whether it's at a bar or whether it's at a or get a case of beer at the grocery store, you're directly impacting this fund. It's not anything more than simply just buying the beer, drinking the beer, enjoying the beer, and knowing that a portion of our profits have gone back, not just at the end of the year, not just, a portion of proceeds, of X of this percentage of beer. It's every single beer, every single day, every single time gets put back into the Drift Fund. So we want to be very transparent with everybody about that because there has been some other groups in the alcohol industry and not in the alcohol industry that, promote themselves as these big time give back partners. But when you really look deep into it, it's a very small line on their profits. And so we wanted to be very transparent, saying that it doesn't matter what day of the year, it doesn't matter when, where, every single beer that is sold, we cut a check at the end of the month to the Drift Fund. And fortunately for now, we're about to cross, I think we have crossed the $6,000, mark, and we've been selling beer since November. So this isn't just a fun marketing tool. This is something that we really truly think is going to be very impactful for the smaller organizations across the entire state.
Yeah, that's man, that's amazing. And you think about smart solutions to social problems. Like if you're cleaning up your water with beer sales, if you say that we have good water, man, in 20 years we should have great water.
Right.
I know I've seen a lot of light beer drunk out on a river over the course of my 30 years. That's
Yeah.
awesome. We're gonna take a quick break. Y'all take a minute to check out some of the businesses that keep this show free for you. This week's episode has been brought to you by Buck's Island. Is a family-owned and operated business since 1948. They have new pontoon boats, bass boats, bow riders, and aluminum boats for sale. They love trade-ins for boats and motors. They can rig your boat or ship your new motor anywhere in the United States. They provide boat service on all kinds of boats, even if they weren't purchased from Buck's. They have factory-trained and certified technicians. Visit them at 4500 Highway 77, Southside, Alabama, 35907 zip code, or give them a call at 256-442-2588. I want to tie back to something that you mentioned earlier. You alluded to part of the goal was to make a beer that was not a super expensive, super special occasion, IPA or sour or something like that, like the daily driver beer, right? And
Sure.
maybe I shouldn't say on a podcast that you have a daily driver beer, I don't anymore. When I was younger, I had daily drivers, but now I drink more coffee than beer. But there's usually the choice that you have to make. And me and my wife wrestle over it with just the personal Williams family household economics. Like if the get you by product is X, and then the product where they donate a portion towards charity, or if you're buying the chicken that's pasture raised and cruelty free and everything, that's X plus Y dollars. And sometimes you have to kind of do the math on that. Is there an MSRP for a six pack of Alabama light beer?
Absolutely. So we actually have two formats of this beer. We have a we call it the Alabama Tall Boy, and on the can it actually says Alabama Tall Boy on it. And it's a cool can with a big Yeti Bigfoot guy on it, and he's picking up. He's actually holding a flag, an Alabama Beer Company flag, and on the bottom of the flag it has all of our beer cans from where he's been picking them up. So it's kind of a
Nice.
he's the protector of the land, so to say. But so those are in 4-pack tall boys, and those run, I've seen them anywhere from $5.99 to $6.99 on the shelf. Where you see, your domestic beers, those are right around the $5.99 to $6.50 price. So it's very comparable. It depends on where you buy your beer. So it's right on par with exactly where your domestic beers, your Miller Lite, your Coors Lights. If you get into the Yingling side of things, it's cheaper than Yingling by $2. I see those at $7.99, $8.99, a 4-pack tall boy. If you're at a local bar, I've seen them at $2 a beer. I've seen them up to $5 a beer. It
Right.
depends on the retailer and where you're at. But our MSRP $6.99, you'll see some people deal down a little bit and get even more competitive there. So we're only. We're no more than a dollar than Coors Light in that format, Miller Light in that format. And we're cheaper than your Yinglings and your Coronas. The other format that we do is 12 packs. So we do 12-ounce 12 packs. We don't do 6 packs because that's, from an economic standpoint, we can be a little bit more powerful on the shelf in 12 packs. So at 12 packs, we see them coming in right at $17.99, and in some places $16.99, just depending again on the retailer, if you're getting them at grocery store or at a convenience store. And to put that in perspective, that's right at the same price as a Corona, a Modelo. So again, we're not trying to convert really anybody that is stuck, with their Bud Light, Coors Light, Miller Lights. That drinker is kind of stuck in their ways, and especially the hardcore ones. That's what they like. That's what they want to get. But we're really trying to convert those people that are the craft beer drinkers that, want to support local, that, may have, some tighter pockets now. As craft beer continues to rise in price, and it's going to rise again this year, we want to be that option for them to fall back on without having to go fully back to the domestic price beer. But we do want to capture those people that are the Coors Light drinkers that just may want something else, and that's okay. We're not really trying to bark up any wrong tree. We're just trying to provide something different than what's been provided in the past.
I feel like that's a real slam dunk that you have there. If you have a light beer that's competitively priced, and then I mean, if we're honest, like, yeah, you have the people who are the Coors people and the Miller Lite people. I know, my dad, I can't think of what they would have to do to get him to switch from Miller to Coors. As long as Miller is in business and making beer, I'm assumed that he'll have another 50 years of drinking that, because that's what he's drank his whole life, or at least my whole life. And but for a lot of people, they're comparable. And if you tell me, like, hey, here's one that's the same price, and this is a local one, that goes to a guy whose face you may actually see in your community, and it goes towards protecting the rivers that you float on, I think that's going to be a pretty powerful combination, man. I know that we're coming up on that time of the year. I'm already starting to see. I was the last day of deer season, I was hunting on a river, and there's kind of a party island on the other side of the river. I got a big sandbar. And it was a warm day, and I was already hearing the pontoon boats go up and down and the music playing. So we're getting to that time of the year where you're going to have people on sandbars, floating,
Yep.
fishing,
Beer drinking season.
camping, yeah, burning a hickory log here and there on the riverbanks, and cooking a Kaneka sausage or two. And that's a great world to imagine, as long as everybody picks up the cans when they're gone with them. I just don't see how you can go wrong with that.
Absolutely. That's,
Absolutely.
we want everybody to have fun on it, but also think about it, leave no trace. It's a very simple thing. And I know that everybody listening to this is a avid angler, outdoorsman, and they're very, very conscious of that. And so we appreciate that. That's the one thing I hate seeing is when you see one can, there's about 20 of them that you don't. So.
I've picked up a lot of cans over the years. No, I think that's great. So we are in a season where it seems like it's in vogue to conduct audits and talk about how the money's getting raised and who gets the money and who decides who gets the money and everything. So talk to me a little bit. Like, we've got this grant fund going, and we're talking about writing checks to people who are trying to do good things for the water. Cindy, can you tell me about who's making those decisions? Like, what's the decision making process look like? Is there a board? Is it one person making the decision? We want to make sure that we're telling our listeners that we have transparency and accountability. Those seem to be the buzzwords this year.
Yeah, absolutely, absolutely. So, yeah, as Stephen mentioned, their transparency is the money that they're giving from the beer, and then they give the Alabama Rivers Alliance that money comes to the Alabama Rivers Alliance. We've done what we call pass through money to local partners over the years in various ways where we've had shared grants or things like that we administer funds that then get passed through to other groups. So we have a line item for that already in our budget. We have the system set up to be able to do that administratively, probably easier than the beer company would be able to do that. So they write the checks to us, and then we had to figure out a way to invite partners in to participate with us as the decision making committee. And with 100 plus partner groups, it was like we can't choose favorites, so we stuck with the statewide organizations that work on water in some way or that have impact on water. So one of our partners is the Water Keepers Alabama, which is a coalition of all the river keepers around the state. And then we have Alabama Scenic River Trail. So they focus on the official, tourism river trails, put-ins and takeouts and floats on the rivers across the state. And the Alabama Cup Racing Association, which they put on the two whitewater races on the Mulberry and the Locust Fork race every year. Alabama Cup's been around for decades, and it's a great group of paddlers that work, volunteers that work really hard to put those races on and really highlight the whitewater that we have here in Alabama, a lot of people don't know about. And so those four organizations with us, or three organizations, and with us makes four. Are the ones that look at the grant application. So we came together and we decided what the grant application would look like. We made it really simple, and they can go to our website or the beer website, and it links to the application. Try to keep it really simple. Really, not much for the local groups have to go through to apply for the funds. They just have to tell us what they need and why and how much money they're asking for. Right now, we have a $1,000 limit set on each grant just to make the money go a little further. As the fund grows, with more money coming in, we might lift that and make it a little more flexible for more spending. And then once the application come in, we send it to all the partners just via email. We let everybody have their vote and make sure that everybody thinks it's okay to spend it on that money. And then we have a little grant agreement, which is pretty simple, and we send a check.
Well, I know this is all very new, but I know some money's already been raised. Have y'all already had any grants issued or grant applications that you feel comfortable talking about on air?
Yes, we actually sent the first check last week, and we've been kind of working out some of those details over the first couple months of the process, and we've been advertising it. And we got an application in January from the Huntsville Environmental Coalition. And that is a group, a startup group of individuals and small all-volunteer groups in the Huntsville area that came together in a coalition. Really, the Alabama Rivers Alliance, we helped kind of pull them together over the last several years, because Huntsville doesn't have a lot of environmental groups. You know, Birmingham's got a few river keepers and other groups focused on water there. And Mobile's got a lot of groups, but there's some places like Montgomery and Huntsville that don't have any, that we've kind of been focusing some energy to see if we could collaborate or pull together some voices there for to protect the water and other aspects of the environment. So the Huntsville Environmental Coalition has officially gotten their 501c3 and become a legit nonprofit organization. They're working with the city of Huntsville and the mayor on a bunch of sustainability initiatives and working with local restaurants on trying to get some of the disposable materials so that they're not getting into our waterways and our streets and our communities. So they applied for funding for some of their startup costs, like developing their website and paying for that and hosting some meetings and doing some of those kind of administrative things to help get their board formed and all their policies in place so that they can continue to grow and apply for other funds and be to do some of the programs they want to do. So they're our first recipient.
That's awesome. Yeah, that's awesome that that has happened so quickly. You start selling beer in November and then February, you're already starting to get that money out there in the community doing good. I know, I think it takes a lot to address the issues that we have. I'm glad that we have public organizations that do it. I'm glad that we have the 501c3s. And then you just have individuals who personally try to do good. I know plenty of people here in my local community that'll organize a trash pickup and you never see it talked about on social media. It'll just be two or three people that go pick up trash. And then I like the final component, you know, if you have corporations genuinely engaging in social projects like that, like, hey, we do business here. We rely on the water. We rely on the resources. We rely on the customers who, you know, drink our beer while they're floating on the water. So it's in our best interest to protect the water that we use in brewing and the water that, you know, gets people out there on 100 degree days when they want to drink a beer. I think that's an awesome system. So,
yep. I think it's a coming together of a lot of good things to do good things. So,
well, I know we're getting close to our time slot. Cindy, let us know for the people who have listened in, circling back, guys, I want to remind you, like, Alabama doesn't have a water plan. There's a lot of waters that aren't officially covered by a water keepers or a friends of the organization. Alabama Rivers Alliance, they do a lot of work kind of filling in the gaps there and working on some of the bigger state level issues. That's an organization that I feel like as an angler that it is in my best interest to keep up with. Cindy, if people agree, if they want to keep up with you and learn more, where's a good place to go?
They can check out our website. It's alabamarivers.org. So that's rivers with an S. A lot of people leave that S off, and it's, we do have, there is an Alabama River, but we're all of them. So alabamarivers.org, and you can check out our website there, and there's information about ways you can engage with us. And also there's a whole page on our partners that we have and ways you can engage to see if you have a local partner in your community that you need, that we want to engage with. And we always encourage you to, you know, start there and then get bigger as you can.
And then Stephen, the question for you, and I've been saving this one, but where can people such as myself, where can we get a hold of an Alabama light beer?
Right on. So we are actively selling this beer across the whole state of Alabama. We have a great distribution partner through Alabev. So if you are a bar or convenience store or grocery store that works with Alabev, you can order the beer from there. But anybody that is looking to purchase the beer, you can go to our website. It's alabamabeercompany.com. And we have a beer finder on there that we update daily. So as new bars and restaurants and convenience stores purchase the beer, we update it there. That'll be the best way to find it. Or if you have a local watering hole, you can just ask them and they can bring it in.
There we go. Well, hey, guys, everybody listening in, y'all just keep in mind that that may be the easiest good deed that you do this summer. Is drinking a beer floating down the river. That might be a dangerous combination with some of the folks I know. If they can drink a beer and do a good deed, maybe all the go ahead that they need.
Don't drink too many. Buy a lot of them, but don't drink them all at once.
That's it. Buy a lot and stagger out the consumption. That's it. That's right. Cindy, Stephen, it's been great having y'all on. Hopefully we can do this in person next time.
Would love to.
Thanks so much, Nick.
We're going to take a quick break. Y'all take a minute to check out some of the businesses that keep this show free for you. This week's episode has been brought to you by Did you know every 40 seconds someone has a heart attack or stroke? In that moment, every second counts and every critical decision matters. Air Medcare Network's air ambulance providers can bring life-saving care directly to those in need at a moment's notice. With 320 locations across 38 states, Air Medcare is the largest air ambulance network. Rest assured, they've got you and your entire household covered. Membership is just $99 a year, or just $79 for seniors. Visit gdo.com/airmedcare to enroll. Week, please subscribe, rate, and review wherever you listen to podcasts. And again, don't forget to text that code ALFFR to 779-345-2918. Again, just text ALFFR, it's Alabama Freshwater Fishing Report, to 779-345-2918. Subscribe to our email list and we'll send you the promo code via email. This week's episode of the Alabama Freshwater Fishing Report has been brought to you by Dixie Supply and Baker Metalworks, manufacture a variety of metal roofing systems to meet your needs. Whether you're putting a new roof on your home or sheeting a commercial building, they have you covered. Dixie Supply and Baker Metalworks, your metal roofing headquarters. Also brought to you by BucksIsland.com. Bucks Island has been in business since 1948 for all of your new and used boat needs, as well as motor sales and service. And now they have a pro-level tackle store. Boat and motor trade-ins are welcome. Visit them online at BucksIsland.com or give them a call at 256-442-2588. Also brought to you by, did you know every 40 seconds someone has a heart attack or stroke? In that moment, every second counts and every critical decision matters. Air Medcare Network's air ambulance providers can bring life-saving care directly to those in need at a moment's notice. With 320 locations across 38 states, Air Medcare is the largest air ambulance network. Rest assured, they've got you and your entire household covered. Membership is just $99 a year or just $79 for seniors. Visit gdo.com/airmedcare to enroll.